Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It started out like any other year, with performances like this one, a Wisconsinite making her debut at the Met via Duluth. Followed by the sold-out world premiere of a haunting work documenting the Twin Ports' darkest day. And then, the music stopped as the concert halls, galleries, and even bookstores shut down.
We were in Lincoln, Nebraska, so we were gone for 4 days with zero shows, and that was my tour in March.
We'll look back at the terrible year of 2020 and how the local arts community responded. That and this week's regional news and review after this.
This was the end of the road. Keep my radio on.
That's Daniel Oyen Lowe with his song urging you to keep your radio on. And if he didn't know it when he wrote it, it was prophetically good advice. Because if you wanted to hear live music in a concert hall or a club for most of this year, you couldn't. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you're counting the days to the end of 2020, you're not alone. The pandemic, police violence that sparked a racial reckoning, and a presidential race lasting forever have been nothing short of brutal for those of us lucky enough to survive. And that's no joking matter. Making it through also meant making a living somehow, and performing artists and authors who make their living filling public spaces were particularly hard hit. Yet many did persevere, migrating from Duluth's Zinema to Zoom, and as Daniel says, it was a good time to keep your radio on as we dedicated our airwaves to help keeping local arts thriving. Joining me for a look back at the local creative community in 2020 is Krista Lawler, the arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune. Welcome to Simply Superior, Krista.
Thanks, Robin Washington, a longtime listener, first-time guest.
You know, you're the first person to use that for this program, so it's all yours. So is there a moment or an online performance or performer story that encapsulates this year for you?
Yes. I immediately go back to March 25th. We're 2 weeks into kind of a lockdown situation, and Charlie Parr played in front of no one at Duluth Cider. It was this beautifully shot concert, about an hour and a half long, a little bit longer. And he's full Charlie Parr. I mean, he's, you know, a master, and he's funny, and he's human, and he's a little bit weird and quirky, and everything he does is so magical. And I remember watching that and thinking and being really moved by his performance, not knowing that this is what we were going to be doing for the rest of the year, right? Like, not knowing that this unique circumstance that I was viewing was something that would just kind of set the tone for the entire year when a lot of people started doing online concerts. His still remains the one that really stood out to me. And I've revisited it a million times, and it's we were so naive then. We were just like pandemic babies at that point. We had no idea.
And, you know, that makes me feel better having him on our air a couple months later because, he had an audience of one. And, of course, everybody who heard the show, too. So,
right.
But, yeah, you absolutely nailed it that the whole thing back then was we didn't know. You know, you had the president saying it was going to be over by Easter or whatever. People kind of knew that wasn't true, but you still didn't know where when you could go to a concert hall or a club or anything.
Right. And I might have tweeted this, but at the time I remember thinking this might end up being the Duluth A&E event of the year. And I kind of stand behind that, but I didn't realize at the time, like, on what level.
Right. Well, we certainly didn't know that in the beginning of the year. So I want to go back to the beginning of the year. We started out in January, right after the new year, with our musical guest was Jenny Hauser. She's actually a soprano from the Madison area, but she made her debut at the Met, which is a big deal for a Wisconsinite. Doesn't happen every day, as the Queen of the Night in Mozart's Magic Flute. But she had previously performed that role in Duluth. In fact, it was either the first or the second time she performed the role, and that's significant because she ended up doing it quite a few times. So at the time, you know, it seemed like, well, this is great. She's on her way. She's at the Met, and we'll have her back again. And I invited her back to Duluth, and, well, you know, obviously that didn't happen.
Right. Didn't you know her grandfather?
Well, absolutely. George Hauser was a pioneer in the civil rights movement. He was the founder of the Congress of Racial Equality, and I got to know him quite well. And he passed away in 2015 at the age of 99, and she sang at his memorial service, and that's where I met her. And again, blowing me away that she'd be at the Met, but she's that quality. Well, we had pretty high quality locally. UMD's director of orchestras, Jean-Rudy Perrault, was commissioned by the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee to write a piece commemorating the 100th anniversary of Duluth's triple lynching in 1920, and that was this year in June. So there was a concert that also featured a symphony by William Grant Still and also his cantata, and they lynched him from a tree. Full disclosure, this concert and commission were conceived and organized by my wife, Julia Chang. That was on March 8th, and it filled up Mitchell Hall at the College of St. Scholastica, and it turned out to be the last major performance in Duluth.
I brought my daughter to that concert, and I remember sitting there, and it was full, and it was, I mean, his piece was so moving, and I sat there with my eyes closed listening to it, and the music so perfectly fit the way that I think a lot of people were feeling. It was so beautiful. And then it was so strange because at that time, I never thought this is the last time I'm going to be in a public space with this. How many people were there? Hundreds?
Right, right. And, you know, I remember we were aware, obviously, of the pandemic.
Right.
And we were taking, like, semi-measures. As I greeted a whole bunch of people, we were doing the elbow bump and we were joking about it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But turned out not to be a joke. So,
but you know what I did do at that? And what stands out to me from that day, in addition to Rudy's piece, is we ate from a buffet.
Oh, we did. You just reminded me. I totally forgot. Yeah.
And I had multiple brownies. I mean, this was probably the best setup of snacks I've seen in a long time. And I am a snack abuser. So I remember multiple trips to this table, just like taking things off trays and not even thinking about it. And now you're just like, what were we doing? But that I love that there's part of me that is like, if there was going to be a last time I was in public in front of a big group, that was perfect. That was so perfect. It was such a meaningful event.
Right. And going again along your theme, I think I said you nailed it already with Charlie Parr. We opened up our airwaves to people who could not perform. We realized we were a radio station, and that's what we do, and started having regular musical guests. Galen Lee was one of the first to graciously accept an invitation, and she told us what she was doing when the lockdown came.
Well, we were in Lincoln, Nebraska, so I decided to turn around. My husband and I started the drive back. And so we were gone for 4 days with zero shows. And that was my tour in March.
So in April, we had Daniel Oyenyowe, who was one of the performers taking advantage of virtual Duluth. Also, so was Liz Jackala and family, who seemed to be having a continuous show in their basement or their living room. Wasn't quite sure which it was. And we invited her on too, and family. Matt Dressel was a creator and coordinator at the time, and he told us it was much more than just musicians.
I think the biggest thing about Virtual Duluth is it's shown the ingenuity of so many people. And because you have to be really creative. You have to come up with an idea and a way to stand out. And you have to come up with a like authentic and genuine idea that really connects with the community.
So what did you think of Virtual Duluth when it first appeared?
Okay, that was an ambitious undertaking, and it was so needed at that moment. It was like he was so quick on the draw on that, and I watched the amount of followers just climb steadily as it was first being developed. And I think there were really some breakout things that happened from that. Like Hannah Ray is a musician that comes to mind who really took advantage of that, that audience. And she'd bring you into her home. She took requests, you know, she's like, no muss, no fuss. You're sitting on her couch with her, and it's both intimate, but it also feels a little bit like you're spying on her. So, I mean, I've definitely grown to appreciate her more from this. I've seen her a few times live, but it was kind of it was great to see her under those circumstances. And I'm really more familiar with her now.
So how sustainable is it, or does it need to be, or are there others, or, you know, platforms like that? What do you see for the future?
You know, I really see that as a thing that's been specific for a certain time and place. I don't know that, and I could be wrong. I don't know that they would probably continue to do that into the future when there is that. I think a lot of the people that made a name for themselves kind of have pulled their own audience in their own direction, and that maybe you don't need that space anymore. But man, what an innovative idea at the time. And it was amazing. I don't check in with it, I'll admit, as often as I used to. I kind of have my go-to things. But, you know, before, probably in the past year, I have thought to myself that sometimes I wish Duluth was a little weirder and a little more edgy with its art and a little riskier. And I feel like the pandemic really gave people a chance to kind of think within a new box.
Well, it's pretty easy to be edgy when CNN has got anchors broadcasting from their basements, like I am right now. So, you know, if that's the standard, go right ahead and, you know, bang on pots and pans if you want to. Right. We're speaking with Krista Lawler, the arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune. We're talking about how local artists and performers adapted to the pandemic. Different creative people responded in different ways. Jazz pianist Ryan Frayne told me that he was taking this time to write, while guitarist Shane Nelson said he wasn't really, although he did take advantage of the time to produce an album. Anybody else have good uses of time or interesting uses that you've come across?
Oh, well, we can go back to Galen Lee, who has taken her time and created a variety show that airs every Sunday on YouTube. And that has been so fun. I interviewed her and she was telling me that she just kind of went to her phone and just started asking musicians if they would meet virtually with her to be on her show. So, you know, she's had everyone from, you know, Anne-Marie Genius, the chalk artist in Duluth, to she has a show coming up with Jeff Tweedy of Wilco and his son Spencer. They're going to be on in January. So what she does is she just splits the screen with them. She kind of interviews them, you know, just kind of rolls through stuff. And then there's performances. And it's like, what a great idea, you know?
Right.
I mean, she's also writing a book, but I just thought that was...
Well, and most important, of course, it keeps them employed in some way, the artists, because, again, if they can't go to the clubs or the concert halls, they have to bring in money some way. So if they say, please donate on those, it's a good idea to do so. If I may put on my creator hat for a moment, we had a radio offering that was supposed to be my big opus for the year, a documentary on Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song Ohio for the 50th anniversary of the Kent State and Jackson State's killings in May. I was working on it for almost a year, and we go back to March. I almost abandoned it at that time because I thought, who in the world wants to hear an anniversary piece? But I was encouraged to finish it, and we did, and we got good response. We aired it again in August for the 50th anniversary of the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Sterling Hall bombing. But in the end, I can't think of too many anniversary pieces that broke out this year. You had one, though, a podcast, again, about the Clayton Jackson McGee centennial.
We did. So that was a project with producer Samantha Urkula that was kind of a long time in the works. We knew we were going to be doing it. We started it around, I want to say late February, early March, again, not knowing, Robin, you actually came in and we interviewed you for that, you know, on a day when we had first started touching people's elbows, banging elbows.
Right.
I remember doing that.
And I came into the paper, which I guess you haven't been to since.
Right. So then much of that had to be done on the phone. And kind of the strange thing that happened while we were writing is the death of George Floyd, which appeared on all of our phones in front of us in real time, which kind of answered the question for us, could a lynching happen in 2020 like it happened in 1920? And, you know, it became a very obvious yes, you know, a modern day equivalent of a lynching. which kind of really changed the podcast for us, and we incorporated that into what we were working on.
Well, also for the actual anniversary in June, the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee had planned to bring 10,000 people to the site where the lynching took place 100 years ago, and they also planned to bring Brian Stevenson, the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative and its National Lynching Memorial in Montgomery, Alabama. But that didn't happen, and they both were tentatively postponed until next year. So
can we go back? I want to mention, on the anniversary of the lynching, I still wanted to stop by the site of the memorial in downtown Duluth to see who would show up, because I really had this feeling that people were going to come. And it did kind of turn out to be a pretty festive day. There was food from Duluth Grill. There were speakers. There had been some gorgeous murals painted down there. People brought flowers. And it really was still a moving experience. And also that space, that Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial, actually kind of turned into a gathering place for, I want to say, the rest of the summer, where people kind of would come and talk and have vigils. And you mentioned Daniel Oyenloye. He created a video called I Can't Breathe. And that was an incredible documentary. He is so gifted and he has such an eye. And he had these most intimate interviews with people about race in Duluth. I mean, that, talk about a piece cropping up from the fire. I mean, this was an amazing documentary.
No question. Well, as amazing as all that was and is, I want to go back to the music. We ended up on the show having quite a lineup. Sarah Thompson, Rachel Kilgore, Charlie Parr, Caden Bill Isles, Vince Osborne, one less guest, Pippi Ardina, who was a frequent performer at the Oldenburg House.
I saw her when I was there.
Right. And so we had to have her back in the area, at least again, virtually or on the airwaves. Any of those you'd like to hear?
One less guest. That's one of the most exciting bands right now, I think. I like that band a lot.
All right. They were actually on our show last week, and as usual, I usually ask for three or four songs, and then I only can play two and a half. So we're talking with Krista Lawler, the arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune. Coming up, we'll take a look on the radio, if you will, at the visual arts of the year for 2020. But first, one less guest with Deja Vu.
just simply sitting around
with your head down to the ground.
Why not add a little play
when it seems like nothing's there?
Add a little passion to catch dreams down in the sky. Feel your heart with laughter, show the people walking by.
Show them that you care, love is in the air, and then you got something.
And that something is the music of Pippi Ardenia and Daniel Lay. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We're looking back on the arts in our region in the trying year of 2020. With me is Krista Lawler, arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune. Welcome back, Krista.
Hi.
I didn't know you were going to sing, but we're done with music now. We just went through all the music stuff. Now we want to talk about the other arts that were affected by this pandemic deal here. And I'll start with the Duluth Art Institute. And another disclosure, a really big one. I am, yes, the board president of the DAI. But even with my great influence and my very tight friendship with Mick Jagger, you know that Mick and I are totally close, right? I had nothing to do with him having a role in the movie The Burnt Orange Heresy, where he actually talks about the Duluth Art Institute. The movie was actually another casualty of the pandemic because it first opened in March, just when all the theaters were closing. Then it had a second opening in Minneapolis a few months later, and that didn't do much better. And a third one at the West Theater in Duluth. And now you can, best place to find it is on Amazon Prime. So let's play a clip.
I sense you're someone not overly fond of personal questions.
And why would that be?
I don't know. Just a hunch. Maybe I'm wrong. Where are you from?
Duluth.
Minnesota. Mm-hmm. The Art Institute there. It used to have a really lovely Toulouse track, but no more.
When I say Duluth, I mean a small town south of the city.
Which one?
It's quite small, Mr. Cassidy. I'm sure you've never heard of it.
Of course not.
So as I said, I do have a vested interest in DAI and Duluth mentions in major Hollywood movies, even if they weren't seen by a lot of people. But am I right to be excited when Duluth is mentioned five times? Or am I just a hick from a tiny town and, you know, getting too overjoyed here? What do you think?
Well, I'm going to take this opportunity to call you a hick just because it's fun, but I actually don't think you are. I also get excited about this. In fact, you had messaged me to watch the movie, and you didn't tell me why I was watching this movie, and I trusted you, and I watched it, and I quickly realized why. I also kind of keep little lists of things that times when Duluth is mentioned in pop culture, and the most recent one I've stumbled on is a favorite podcast of mine is You're Wrong About, in which one of the hosts had mentioned during their series about Princess Diana that they described her as looking like a wine mom from Duluth. And I collect these and I hold each one dear to my heart. In fact, I just got a copy of Gore Vidal's Duluth in the mail yesterday. So I was more than happy to watch Burnt Orange Heresy and to hear them mention the Duluth Art Institute and actually a piece that was there until it was sold.
Right, at Toulouse-Lautrec, which officially, I will say this as a board member, we're looking for. We would like to get that back. So. Well, the Art Institute isn't as dependent as a symphony or the playhouse for filling auditoriums. We have persevered throughout the year. And, of course, we do want people to attend our openings, which has been a sporadic deal because the depot has been open and closed, and so has our Lincoln Park building. And the Children's Museum is having a particularly trying time right now.
Yeah, it has to raise a bunch of money. But I'm seeing a lot of people fundraising for them online, and a lot of people are really pulling for the Children's Museum. And I have seen a lot of online support for a lot of people trying to do fundraising to save it, which is kind of a neat thing to see. It's just, there's only so much money to go around. And are you giving it to the ballet? Are you giving it to the Art Institute? Are you giving it to the Children's Museum? It's really hard to decide where to allocate your own support.
Right. Well, there are some creative efforts happening. Again, we've done a lot online with the Art Institute. The Symphony has had hybrid concerts where they have a few people at the deck in the auditorium. They have musicians socially distanced spread out, so it's not your normal orchestra lineup. And then you can watch at home. And You know, I have a comfy couch, and it's actually really good for watching the symphony. So,
you know what? I love the DSSO doing this. And this is one of those kind of responses I mentioned earlier, too. I wanted to see Duluth get a little bit weirder. And, you know, a classical company, it's hard to get too weird. But if you've ever talked to Brandon, who is the executive director of the DSSO, I won't even try to say his last name because it's got a lot of V's and W's in it. But he is so excited about what they're doing there. And he's just a wide-eyed human who was really looking forward to implementing these changes. And I mean, that's what companies need, right? Like they need innovation. And so I've been really excited to see what he's doing there. Another company that's kind of done that is the ballet, who is now in the process of putting together its Nutcracker, which I think goes live today, Friday, and is available for download. You know, again, people making do, right? And coming up with some great ways to do it.
Great. Well, authors haven't suffered the same as performing artists, but they've been hit as well, not because they can't write books, but because they can't give readings or book tours. We also had several on the air because of this. Tashia Hart with her children's book, Gigi and the Wolves. Margie Price with a whole bunch of books. We actually ended up having two shows about her because she kept writing them. She actually said they were written before and the publishers just happened to get around to publishing them. So Linda Lagarde Grover and Tom Peacock, poet Jason Ayan, and local historian Tony Durkins with Duluth, an Urban Biography, which is about a whole bunch of stuff, but it covers the 1918 flu pandemic. Of course, Tony is our, you know, prized local historian, and getting him on that subject, I suppose I should have asked what else was in the book, but we spent the whole time talking about that. In fact, you got to listen to some of it.
It came to us in by late September 1918, when we started. It was the 10th of October when the Superior decided to go under a ban, and it was the next day in Duluth. And this affected churches, schools, theaters, lodges. Those were all forbidden. The restaurants remained open. Both the Twin Ports had already voted themselves dry, so there were no saloons. Everything was limited. Funerals were limited to members of the deceased. But yet, industry roared on. People still went by the thousands to the shipyards to work and ate in cafeterias together.
So just hearing how Duluth and Superior dealt with it back then tells you, you know, maybe a little bit of encouragement that we can get through it. We also had a local author made good that was irrespective of the pandemic. Chris Monroe and her Monkey with a Tool Belt series announced that it was going to be picked up by Netflix way back in 2019. Remember that year? And during the lockdown was probably the best time for that, and it actually did air. So we got to hear what Chico Bon Bon sounded like as interpreted by Netflix.
I'm Chico Bon Bon, monkey with a tool belt.
And we're the
Fix-It Boys!
Rainbow Thunder!
So what's on the Krista local bestseller list?
Well, first of all, I have to double back and say props to Chris Monroe with that series. It is, my daughter loves it. She's 7, and she gets a kick out of it. And when a new season cropped up recently, she was like really stoked about that. My own bestseller list, I love Margie Price. I think she writes these great YA novels that are based on historical facts, but she gives them kind of her own. She gives personalities to the people involved, and oh man, I love what she does. You can almost feel her stories. There's a scene with kids riding down a hill on a sled, and you can feel the wind in your hair.
You're speaking of Village of Scoundrels, which is about teenagers in a French village during World War II who hide other teenagers who are Jewish from the Nazis. And let's hear Margie read a bit.
I'm just going to start pretty close to the beginning. As I mentioned before, originally, at the very beginning of the war, there wasn't a policeman in this village. But they find out that they're hiding Jews and other war refugees, and they send a policeman to spy on the villagers. Okay. His name is Inspector Perdin, which in French means loser. By the time Perdin arrived, winter had settled in, and the streets were snow-covered and slippery. Since the village was built on the side of a steep hill, this could make for treacherous going. He was mincing his way to the cafe across from his hotel when a loud, sustained shriek made him stop in the middle of the street. Someone in danger? Distress? Perhaps his brand new job as a sole police officer was about to begin with something truly dramatic. He turned his head, all his senses alert. Maybe one of the illegals said to be hiding here was trying to murder someone. If he could just pinpoint where the scream was coming from, he would dash to the rescue. The high, keening "ee" transformed to a squeal of "ah!" And did he detect an element of glee in that scream? The sound grew closer and clearer, like a train engine echoing between stone walls, now muffled, now screaming, now rounding a corner, gathering speed. Then there, careening at high speed down the street, aimed straight at him, came a train of sleds ridden by teenagers. Surely they'll stop, Perdant thought. He flung up his free hand, palm first, as if he might stop them by sheer force of will. Quickly realizing that they couldn't possibly stop, he lunged out of their way at the last moment. "Oh!" the riders screamed as they rocketed past him. No sooner had one sled gone by when another followed, and then another. A cap blew off, a glimpse of red stockings, a hair ribbon, snow-frosted eyeglasses. Did that boy just stick his tongue out as he whisked past? A little brown and white dog chased after, barking and barking. The squeals of delight echoed between the village shops, then changed tone when the teen zoomed past the town square. Sparks flew from the metal runners as the sleds clattered over the railroad tracks, and the screams faded as the riders rounded the corner and headed toward the bridge that spanned the river. He knew the town was full of teenagers. They came from all over France to attend some kind of exceptional high school meant to promote peace and international unity. A little too late for that, Perdant thought. Many of these students lived in boarding houses. It was known that some of them were foreign Jews and other illegals and undesirables. And since he was also quite sure it was not legal to ride sleds down the main street, there were obviously delinquents among them. Scoundrels, Perdant said aloud before he stepped into the cafe, notebook under his arm, ready to begin his first report.
That was Margie Price reading from one of her oodles of books published in 2020, Village of Scoundrels. It's on the list of Krista Lawler, our guest and the arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune. So who else is on your list, which I'm thinking meshes pretty well with the people we've had on the show?
Tony Durkins. I mean, here is a guy who is so fun to talk to, and having one of his books sitting next to you, it's always fun to just open one and just read about Duluth and its past, and or its beer or its postcards or anything that has cropped up. He's kind of got everything covered. So I always love him. I have Linda Lagarde Grover on my to read list, and I've had a copy of Jason Ion's book for far too long and I haven't read it yet. That is also on my list. So Gidgey and the Wolves is also sitting here in a stack right next to my bed. So that is another one that I'm eager to dig into.
Speaking of wolves, we also had Wolf Island by David Meach. He was the researcher, the initial researcher on Isle Royale during the wolf study, which has gone on for more than half a century now, and a fascinating read indeed. So since you haven't gotten to Jason Ewen's poetry, we're going to end with that and let Jason Ewen do the talking from our interview back last summer. We've been talking to Krista Lawler, arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Come back next year. Actually, come back sometime before next year. And you know what? It doesn't have to be a pandemic, all right?
All right. You're going to find me like knocking on your basement door.
Well, be sure to do an elbow bump. And here's University of Wisconsin Superior professor and poet Jason Ewen with a selection from his volume about two fictitious Proctor and Superior residents, Rose and Blood, followed by Superior's Shane Nelson singing, I Do What I Do.
I've got kind of a fun one. It's a Rose Mirtha poem, which, you know, kind of addresses a lot of the anxiety that the other poems do, but it's in a much more playful manner. That might be a nice one to end with. This one is called What Good Parents Say. You can go anywhere and do anything as long as you don't hurt anyone or hurt the earth, and remember that no good American would ever leave for good. The world is round, so you can't fall off. In fact, you can't escape. So save the environment, save the animals, save us all, save yourselves. Run as far away as you possibly can, but stay in touch. We love you.
It's been a long time coming, and I can't say I've seen my day. Question my faith in the things that I do. What could bring someone to come to that? They follow their heart through and through. Oh, I'm coming to conclusions. There's decisions to make. If I do what I do, tell me what's the takeaway? Oh, some do for the money, they can, it's fair game. I can't move without a purpose. I take to my grave. I'm tired of believing and all my wishing, cause I'm dreaming on fumes. I think I do what I do simply because I'm doing what I love to do. There's some folks that think they know me. They think they caught on to my game. They hear my old song and that's the place they conclude. There might be something to that, but there's very few truths that are absolute. And that's this one too. Oh, I've made a few impressions now, but what do you make if you saw what I do? When your eyes, they look away. You see, I like to go to the movies. I stay out till it's late. I like to roll the dice and play some cards. Don't know when to walk away. If there's something I'm missing, then my friend, well, the next drink's on you. I think I do what I do simply because I'm doing what I love to do. No, I don't make good investments. I'm not good on time. But if someone missed out, well, that's your loss, not mine. If you value my presence, then my friend, there's something in it for you. I think I do what I do simply because I'm doing what I love to do. No, it might not be for you to tell you the truth. It's just something that I've got to do when I do.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
How the heck are you, Robin?
I'm good in these final days of 2020. So, Brooks, you reported on a development this week that just missed our arts roundup for these days of 2020. Are there dreams of making the Twin Ports the next Hollywood?
That is what advocates would like to see. St. Louis County this week, the Board of Commissioners passed a up to $1 million film and TV production incentive to lure crews up to St. Louis County and the broader region. One of the advocates, Ricky McManus of the Upper Midwest Film Office, says, quote, it's truly the fastest form of job creation post-pandemic. So they're hoping that we can get TV crews up here and make up for the lack of a robust state incentive, which has fallen to about $500,000 per year. That's Minnesota's controversial snowbait incentive, which advocates are also pushing to increase. So up to $1 million in St. Louis County, now available for rebates for qualifying productions.
Well, that's ambitious and looking to the future, but back to the present and back to the COVID front. The vaccine is here. You didn't need me to say that. What's the latest for the rollout in our part of Wisconsin, Danny?
Yeah, well, you know, for rural health officials, they've been really concerned about the rollout of the Pfizer vaccine because it needs to be stored at temperatures colder than winter in Antarctica to keep them from spoiling. And so, you know, we have the first round of around 50,000 doses that's coming through Wisconsin this week. It's not expected. Problem for rural healthcare providers or hospitals, according to the Wisconsin Rural Health Cooperative. And that's because, you know, once they're removed from storage, there's so few of the doses that they would receive that they would likely be used up in that time frame, you know, within that 5 days after they're kept in refrigeration.
And colder than winter in Antarctica is actually colder than winter in northwest Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah, if you can believe that. Sometimes it feels like it's not. But, you know, once this vaccine is removed from storage, it can be kept in refrigeration at hospitals for about 5 days. So it's not expected to be a problem for rural hospitals or healthcare providers when they receive this vaccine because there are so few doses right now that are being handed out. But, you know, rural hospitals like Hayward Area Memorial Hospital is preparing, you know, for receiving this vaccine and how they would go about vaccinating their workers. Priority is being placed on those who have direct contact with patients. But they're not planning to vaccinate all of their healthcare workers at once in case there are side effects. They don't want to create a staffing shortage. And possibly next week, if the Moderna vaccine is approved, Wisconsin could also see 100,000 doses of that vaccine, which would actually be more beneficial for rural healthcare providers and hospitals in northern Wisconsin because it doesn't require that extra cold storage like the Pfizer vaccine. So they would be much more equipped to handle that.
Well, that all continues as a race against time. Brooks, back on the Minnesota side, while people wait, the numbers are still not looking good.
It was a staggering month in terms of COVID infection in Minnesota and in Wisconsin, frankly. In St. Louis County, there was a 160% increase in cases in November and a 138% increase across the border in Douglas County. That has recently equated into a record number of deaths in the region. Just in December now, 60 people have died in St. Louis County from COVID-19. That's about a third of all coronavirus deaths we've seen so far in the county. Douglas County, too, has seen a huge spike in coronavirus deaths. Only one person had died from the virus through November 8th. And now, as of Wednesday this week, there have been 29 confirmed and probable deaths. Carlton County has also seen its previously low death rate skyrocket to 30 since mid-November.
Well, as the pandemic goes on, we're actually still fighting the opioid epidemic. It really hasn't gone away. But there's a new effort in Duluth?
That's right. On the heels of the deadliest year we've seen in Duluth in terms of opioid overdose deaths, 19 people this year have died from opioid overdoses in Duluth. The Duluth Police Department just received a $900,000 grant to create the Lake Superior Diversion and Substance Use Response Team. Now, that means that they're going to add a second peer recovery specialist and a licensed drug and alcohol counselor. The department has, in recent years, taken moves to address the demand for drugs in the region so that people will be less likely to sell it here. So they're thinking if we put more people in treatment, we'll reduce that demand and we'll get more people on the road to recovery. Already, since 2018, the Duluth Police Department has had an opioid response technician, and her caseload is already over 100 people, and she certainly needs backup that she's grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Opioids are very much a rural America problem, and poverty is one factor. Danny, Wisconsin's looking at ways to increase prosperity.
Yeah, a new report that came out from the state's Office of Rural Prosperity this week is, you know, touting the need to expand broadband internet service and address housing and childcare shortages across rural Wisconsin in order to create economic growth. And the report calls for a number of things, including economic development programs that are geared toward rural communities specifically, And, you know, it calls for other things like easing levy limits or state restrictions on raising property taxes to give local governments more flexibility in funding some programs that would boost rural economic development, and also boosting state funding for county-level education programs through the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Extension. So those are a few of the things that this report included, and it also touched on, you know, providing more equity and fairness towards a variety of groups in rural Wisconsin, including tribes and Native Americans.
Mm-hmm. And while there's that effort to improve the economy of rural Wisconsin, you've got some news about cleaning up the environment as well.
Yeah, the state also released a plan this week to address PFAS. And if you don't know what that is, basically PFAS is this class of chemicals that are really difficult to break down in the environment. And they're found in firefighting foam and everyday products. They're of concern because they've been linked to health problems like cancer, thyroid disease, and reproductive issues. And so the state has been working on a plan for a little more than a year, and they came out with a list of 25 action items to address it, including testing public water supplies to see what PFAS levels are in drinking water, and also requiring polluters to set aside funds for cleanup of sites that have been contaminated with PFAS. And in Wisconsin, environmental regulators are monitoring more than 50 sites with PFAS contamination, and that includes Superior, you know, as a result of the Husky Energy refinery fire that we saw back in April of 2018.
All right. Well, hopefully a promising future. We've been speaking with Danielle Cady, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin. Happy holidays.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter, as, once again, I do. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We'll be off for the next 2 weeks, which happen to be Christmas and New Year's Day, to bring you WPR's network programming for those holidays. We hope they're great for every one of you, and that 2021 is even better. Simply Superior is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. We had administrative support from Allison Wade and years of technical expertise and help from John Talcott. Paul Damberg is our executive producer, and our theme song was written and performed by Bruce Nelson. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with a bit of optimism from Charlie Parr. Stay safe, everyone.
When I go down that funeral road, Lord, I'm gonna be dressed up fine. I'm gonna have me a nice new suit and tie like I never could have afforded when I was alive. Well, I ain't dead yet, let me wear that suit right now. I ain't nobody gonna see it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Lord, I ain't dead yet, give me my flowers now. Big old band, they're gonna play all my favorite songs. Well, they plant me in the sand. Ah, but I ain't dead yet, let me hear that music now. There ain't no way I can hear it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. They're gonna have nice things to say. They're gonna say, you know, he was a good egg. Yeah, even don't really feel that way. I mean, I ain't dead yet. Tell me what. what you think right now. You can't look me in the eye when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Well, I ain't dead yet. Give me my flowers now. When I go down that funeral road, there's gonna be flowers everywhere.